We're holding on page 38 in Shabbos, third line, middle of Oschach Vav. So yesterday we learned how Reb Shimon ben Yochai was saying that after he got out of the cave and all these nisim happened to him, that he should do something to improve the city, just like Yaakov Avinu did to improve the city of Shechem after the nisim that happened to him. So Reb Shimon says, Ika milsa debor v'takuni, is there anything around here that needs to be fixed up? Specifically, we're talking about in the city of Tveria. So they told him, Ika duchte, there's a certain place in the city over here. The ispe sofik tuma. There's a sofik whether there's tumas mess over here. There's a sofik whether there are bodies buried under the ground. The islo itzada la koyinim la kufi. So the koyinim have a hard time of it. They have to bypass. They have to go on a roundabout on a detour around the area in case there are bodies underground. So it's a hardship. So if we can deal with it, then that would be something good. Historical sources, actually, the historian Josephus tells us that the city of Tveria was built by one of Herodotus' sons and named after the Roman Emperor Tiberius, and that he actually built it, knowingly or unknowingly, as the case may be, on top of a base of Kvaris. So now Reb Shimon is 150 years later, and they still have the problem. So Reb Shimon says, Ika inish de yada de ischazik hochatara. Is there anybody who knows that at one point this place had a cheskas tower? Because, in other words, if you knew at one point this street or whatever it is, this marketplace or whatever it is that we're dealing with was known to be tahor, then we can say, okay, so afterwards it may have happened one time a body was accidentally buried over here. In that case, al pi halacha, you'd be allowed to remove it because it's not really a fixed base akvaris. As opposed to if nobody knows that this place ever had a cheskas tahara, then we would have to consider that it would be an actual base akvaris, and then in that case, then you're not allowed to move the bodies. Is there anybody who knows that at one point there was a cheskas tahara in this area? So a certain old man told him, Kan kitzitz ben zakai truma se truma. Over here in this same area, ben zakai, which pashtos means Rabbi Yechon ben zakai, cut up Trumasin of truma. Trumasin are a type of beans, and in English they're called lupines. The Gemara mentions in some places they're very bitter, and you have to cook them multiple times, and eventually they become sweet. Anyway, the point is they're truma; they have to stay tahor. Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai himself, Rashi says, was a koyin. Although there's a Tosfos in Menachos that argues that maybe that's not. Maybe he actually wasn't a koyin. But even whether he was or he wasn't, the point is the truma, the trumasin definitely had to stay tahor. So he cut them up over here. So if he was here and he did that, obviously there must have been areas over here that are known to be tahor. So he also did that. What does it mean he also did that? Like what? So Rashi says it means he did the same thing as Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai. And Rashi brings from a Gemara Yerushalmi and from a Medrash that what he did is he was cutting up trumas plants and throwing them in the areas over there, all the areas where there's a suffix truma. A nest happened, any place where there were mesim, then they would float to the surface, or at least they would move underground to the extent that now the soil would be disturbed, and then you could notice that, and then you could mark off those areas of the kvarim, and then the rest of the areas the kohenim can safely go. On the other hand, Tosfos learns that not. Tosfos learns that Ovid Iunami Hochi just means that he followed in Yaakov's footsteps, the same way as we said before, that Yaakov did something to improve the city. So now Reb Shimon was going to do something to improve the city as well. And as far as the Kitzitz Ben Zakkai, Truma Se Truma, so Marsha explains in Chedusha Halachas that Tosfos would learn it wasn't necessarily Derech Nes. What we mean is, it is true that places where bodies are buried, naturally the ground is going to be softer there. That's forensic scientists work that way. When they're looking where bodies are buried, they look where the soil seems to have been disturbed. So he could do the same kind of thing. In particular, what he would do is, and Marsha brings from a different source that he would spread from Gemara and Nida that mentioned something similar. They spread out sheets over there, and then there were some places where the water would soak more easily into the ground because it's soft, and there's other areas where it wouldn't because it's hard, and that would tell them what's where. So similarly, be here with the turmasin, he could be planting them in the ground in different places, and some places would be harder and some would be softer, and that would tell us where the bodies are. So kolahetz davakoshi tare. So every place where the ground was hard, he declared it tahor, because obviously it hasn't been dug up, at least not any time recently. But kolahetz davirofi tsayne. Any place that was soft, he would mark it, as the Gemara tells us in Moed Katan, and the Yerushalmi tells us in Shkolim about the details of marking graves. They would use plaster and they pour it over there, whatever. So he did that. Now the kohenim know what areas are off limits and which are not. However, Hahu Sava said, Pasha, the same one who told him about Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai, says, Tia ben Yechoi, Besakvaris. He says, what's going on over here? Ben Yechoi has now been Matahar, a cemetery. In other words, you shouldn't be doing that. What do you mean you're relying on turmasin, whether derech nes like Rashi says, or whether just in a natural way like Marsha says. Either way, this is the basic bonus. How do you think to even be matar? Right? Fine, Rabbi Yechem and Zakkai did what he did in his times. Fine, that wasn't necessarily in this particular location, and maybe he knew how to be careful. But how can you go and declare that it's tahor forever? The Chassam Sofer actually has an interesting point in one of his Trubas. He says this area may have been something which is a Rishus HaYochid L'Tumah. Now you have, just like in Hilchus Shabbos, you have Rishus HaYochid and Rishus HaRabim, you have that in Hilchus Tumah V'Tara as well, although they're not exactly the same. There are areas that are Rishus HaYochid for Shabbos and Rishus HaRabim for Tumah, and vice versa. Anyway, so he learns that this area may have been in Rishus HaYochid L'Tumah. Reb Shimon would have held, that's not a problem, we can still declare it Tahor, whereas Ahu Sava is arguing that, this old Talmud Chacham is arguing that no, you still have to consider it Tomei Misafik, and how could you declare it Tahor? Amalei, so Reb Shimon tells him, Ilmalei Loi HaYiseimanu, you know what, if you hadn't been with us when we voted on this, apparently, you know, the Gemara is leaving out this part, but apparently besides for the practical thing that Reb Shimon did involving the Turmasin, afterwards he gathered together the local Talmidei Chachamim to vote on whether that was a valid test and whether we can rely on that in the future for Kohen. So if you hadn't been with us at the time, even if you were there present and you didn't actually join join our side of the vote, then you'd have a valid point. Look, you know, you could say, I wasn't there, or I didn't agree with you, so therefore, you know, I'm entitled to hold a different opinion. But now you were with us there. You also agreed with us that on voting that this should be the halacha. Now all of a sudden you want to change your mind and you want to make a whole stink about it publicly. It's going to degrade the honor of Talmid Chachamim. Yomru, people will say, even Zonis mefaukas zuasu. Even Zonis beautify one another, even though they're rivals, but still one will braid the other one's hair in order to make her look nice. Ben Yehoyada points out, why would they do that? Because each one, of course, wants more customers for herself. But after all, they also know if all of them look attractive, that'll bid up the price for any of them. More people are likely to be attracted to there, therefore they can charge higher prices. So in the Nimshal, in other words, even if the Talmidei Chachamim are disagreeing with each other, still, it's in their interest to present a united front so people don't come to degrade Talmidei Chachamim. So how much more so Talmidei Chachamim should have respect one for another. So how can you now go and be trying to make a whole stink about this and claim that it was wrong when you yourself agreed before to it? So Reb Shimon put his eyes on the Ahu Sava and he passed away. Tosfos in some places points out, actually, there's a Tosfos in Chulin that points out that many times in the Gemara that it's brought from the Gaonim that Ahu Sava can mean of a Yohan Nabi. Here, Tosfos said it's hard to say that because what do you mean he killed him? Continues the Gemara. Nafik Lashuka. Then Reb Shimon went out to the market, Chazil Yehuda ben Gerim, and he saw Yehuda ben Gerim, who had started all the trouble by telling what Reb Yehuda and Reb Yossi and Reb Shimon about their conversation all those years earlier. He says, this guy is still living in the world. Again, he put his eyes on him in anger. He turned him into a heap of bones. which Tosfos actually previously explains that it shouldn't be a heap of bones. Again, Tosfos learned that this Yehudim and Gerim is actually Reb Yehudim and Gerim, was a distinguished Talmid Chacham, whom even Reb Shimon at one point respected and sent his son Reb Elazar to him to get a bracha, so he wouldn't become a Gal Shalat Samas, which is the term that you use for some for a lowlife who gets killed by a tzaddik. Rather, it should be Noch Nafshe, like the Ahu Sava from the previous line. On the other hand, again, Etz Yosef said there might be two Yehudim and Gerims, so according to that, this one tackle was a lowlife and did deliberately mean to maser on Reb Shimon, and therefore he deserved what he got. According to that, we say that the Girsa that we have in front of us, that it was Gal Shalat Samos, Ben Yehoyada points out there would be a practical reason for it. If his body still looks like he just passed away, then the Romans or whoever are likely to think that Shimon just killed him and then he's going to be in trouble all over again. But if they see a heap of bones, nobody's going to think he was just killed. They're going to think this is obviously a skeleton that's been here for a long time, and therefore Shimon in effect has an alibi. The Mishnah goes on to say, a person has to say three things in his house Erev Shabbos before it gets dark. He has to ask, Isautem, did you take Meiser? Eravtem, did you make the Erevin? Erev Chatzeres, Erev Tchumen, and had liquid and air and light the Shabbos candles. So the Gemara says, Menohani Mili, where do we know this from? Omer Rabbi Shimon Levi, Omer Kru, because the pasuk says, "V'yadata ki shalom ahalacha." You should know, you will know that your tent, meaning your household, is at peace. Or for kadta nafa, you'll pay attention to your dwelling. V'lo sechta, and you won't sin. So, in other words, the point is that you want to have that there should be shalom in the house. In particular, the Neder Shabbos are for shalom, and that way also you'll have shalom when you're in your household and with bnei beischa. So Marsha explains that Rashi seems to be understanding that the pasuk is only telling us about the hadlikwa, about the importance of hadlikwa and there. It's not referring to the isautim and eravtim; those are not being hinted at in the pasuk. On the other hand, Etz Yosef brings over here from the Rosh that says that no, all three of them are actually hinted at in the pasuk. Sholem Ahalecha means the candles, because that's for Sholem Bayis. Or for Kadja Navcha, meaning that you'll take care of your dwelling, refers to the Erev Echatzeres, where there you have now you've taken care of your dwelling, that now you're able to carry in and out of it on Shabbos. Veloy Sechta, and you won't sin, where the word Techta also means to be lacking something, like Ani Uvni Shleim Echatoyim, so that refers to taking Meiser, where otherwise, as we learned before, then there's a shortage of food as a punishment for not taking Meiser, so therefore all three of them are actually hinted at in the pasuk. Peshur Agadta, by the way, points out an interesting point. He says that with the first two, Isartem and Eravtem, you'll also realize from that by who gives the answer whether the Kishalom Alecho Fakad Tanovcha Velesechta, elsewhere the Gemara refers that it has to do with that a man will know that his wife is not Nidya. So in this case, by asking Isartem and Eravtem and listening who's going to give the answer, he'll know that automatically without even asking her. Because if she's Tomei, if she's Nidya, she can't take Meiser, because it has to be kept to her, and if he asks Isautim and Eravtim and other people answer, automatically he knows his wife is a Nida, as opposed to if she answers that she did it, then he knows she's Tahar. So the Gemara continues, Omer Rabba Bar Avuna, Afa Gavda Omer Rabbanon Shloish Advarim Tzorach Adem Loim Avachola, even though we're saying that a person has to say these three things before Shabbos, Tzorach Loim Eminu B'nei Chusa, he has to say them gently, so that they will accept it from him, so they'll be willing to do what he says. And then the point is, in other words, that Ben Yehoyada says, the point is, even though it says tzorich, which suggests that it's a very strong chiyuv on you, and therefore you better do it no matter what, but make sure to say it in a gentle way. So the Gemara says, Amar Ravashi, Anola Shmili Hoda Amar Rabba Bar Avuna. I hadn't previously heard of what Rabba Bar Avuna said, B'kiyamti Mis Svara, but I kept it because of Svara, because logically that's how it should be, because a Talmid Chacham should speak should speak in a gentle way in his household and not call it, the Gemara talks about elsewhere, that it's a problem if a person causes Eima Yisera, too much fear, in his household. So Rav Ashi knew just from Svara that that should be the case. Marsha explains, and that Gemara is in Gittin about Eima Yisera. Marsha refers over here to what he explains over there, that Rav Ashi is saying, even if a person knows that whatever he says in his household is going to go, because the people there all respect and fear him greatly, nevertheless, he shouldn't rely on that. Say it b'nichusa, so that they'll be willing to accept what he's saying. Okay. The Gemara goes on to talk about the proper time for lighting Shabbos candles, and it gets into a whole complicated sugya about when Bein HaShemoshes begins and ends, which you have all the different opinions ad hayom hazeh about how to calculate it exactly. So the Gemara quotes, so the Gemara says, Ezehu Bein HaShemoshes, what is the period of Bein HaShemoshes? And also, because the Mishnah says that there are certain things, when it's Bein HaShemoshes, when it's Suffolk Yom, Suffolk Laila, so you're not allowed to take Meiser from Vadai, for example, but you're allowed to take Meiser from Dmai. And you're not allowed to light Shabbos candles, but you're allowed to do Hatmona, for example. So therefore, that leads the Gemara into discussing when exactly Bein HaShemoshes is. So Ezehu Bein HaShemoshes, Mishatishka Chama, from when the sun sets, and here you have the famous thing between the Geonim versus Rebbe Natan about what the sun sets mean, where the Geonim and also the Alter Rebbe and also the Vilna Gaon all hold that it means exactly what it sounds like when the sun sets below the horizon. And then you have the Shita of Rebbe Natan as opposed to that, that says that it means when the sun's rays set below the horizon, which is about an hour later. Anyway, B'chol's man shepnei Mizrach ma'adimin, as long as the face of the east is reddish, Rashi points out, because you have the sun is shining through the clouds, so therefore it looks reddish. So there's actually a Gemara elsewhere in Baba Basra that says a deeper reason why the sun sometimes looks red in the morning and in the evening, because it's passing in front of Gehenna and in front of Gan Eden. Anyway, so as long as the face of the east is red, the Gemara actually further on explains that Pnei Mizrach actually means the western horizon. It's called Pnei Mizrach because it faces towards the east. Anyway, and the Gemara continues, Hichsif Atachton, if the bottom part of the sky has gotten dark, or Hichsif literally means it became gray, it became like Kesef, like gray, Rashi translated said Hishchir, it became dark. Veloy Hichsif Elyon, but the upper part of the sky has not yet become dark. Zeu, then that is Bein HaShemoshes, that's the time which is still Bein HaShemoshes, and it's Suffolk the day, Suffolk the night. Once the top part of the sky also darkens and becomes equal in darkness to the bottom, Zohu Laila, then that's already nightfall and it's for sure the next day. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, that's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Reb Nechemya says you can't necessarily rely on the color of the sky. Instead, the amount of time is when the amount that a person could walk a half a mil after the sun sets. There's different opinions among the Rishonim how long it takes to walk a mil, 18, 22 and a half, or 24 minutes, based on a Gemara in Psachim. So therefore, based on that, Rav Nechemya's shir is going to be either 9, 11 and a quarter, or 12 minutes. Most of the poskim hold that these figures of Rav Nechemya and the next one, Nechemya and some other ones that the Gemara mentions further on in the sugya are all at the latitude of Eretz Yisrael. Different places you'd have to calculate astronomically how much that particular depression angle of the sun, as it's called, what would that equal in local time. For example, the Alter Rebbe talks about in Seder Achnasas Shabbos that in his area of Lithuania and Belarus and whatever, it would be about half an hour. Even in Eretz Yisrael itself, it depends on the seasons of the year. We're talking about here primarily Nisan time, during the summertime and during the wintertime. It's more because the sun is going on an angle, etc. There's an enormous amount of ink has been spilled on this, and a whole svarim that have been written about all the ins and outs of this. Anyway, the Gemara continues. Rabbi Yosi Omer, Bein HaShemoshes Keherifayin. Bein HaShemoshes is just like an eye, like a blink of an eye. Zen Nichnas V'Zeh Yotze. One day is coming in, the night is coming in, the day is going out. V'ef Shalamed Olav. It's impossible to know exactly when that moment is. So Tosfos explains, in other words, that it's not all Rav Yosi is saying is that you Chachamim were saying that Bein HaShemoshes lasts for quite a while. I'm saying it lasts much less than that. but it's not that he knows the exact moment. No, it's hard to know the exact moment when one day begins and one day ends. But Rabbi Yossi is saying whatever it is, the transition from one to the other, Bein HaShemashes, is much shorter than you're making it to be. The Alter Rebbe, Sefer Hechnasas Shabbos, explains that Rabbi Yossi's head of ayin means 2 minutes. Because he says, because you have, on the one hand, you have a mil that it talks about. So a mil is 18 minutes. On the other hand, there's other places that it implies that it's 1/3 of an hour, which is 20 minutes. So the difference between those two is the 2 minutes, he says. Again, even within the Alter Rebbe's opinion, there's quite a number of different ways of understanding it. You have the Ber Levin has written about it, and lots of other people have written about the ins and outs of trying to untangle it. And what's the relevance of it for Ein Yachter? So Habonim refers to something that he said earlier in Brachas, which is that we should realize how the amazingness of Hashem and how Loi Machshavoyse Machshavoyseichem. We human beings, even Rabbi Yossi is saying he can't know the exact moment of Bein Hashemashes, but the Eibishter knows to the microsecond. As we have, for example, by Maisa Bereshis, where the Eibishter is able to continue creating at a time when we would already have to stop work, because for us it would be Suffolk Shabbos. Then the Gemara goes on to mention, as it discusses this whole matter of Bein HaShemashes, so it mentions about Reb Nechemya's shear of a half a mil. So the Gemara explains what you could do is conceivably you could be standing on top of the Har HaCarmel in Eretz Yisrael and go down from the mountain, dip in the Mediterranean, and come back up to the mountain, and you'll still have dipped during the daytime, and therefore you'll be able to have a head of Shemesh. So that gives you an idea of how long Reb Nechemya's shear is. So now, having mentioned standing on top of the Har HaCarmel and doing that, so now the Gemara mentions another thing, incidentally, that also has to do with standing on Har HaCarmel. Amar Reb Chiya, Haroitz Aludis Be'era Shel Miriam, if a person wants to see the well of Miriam, what happened to it after the 40 years in the desert, Yala L'Rosh HaCarmel, he should go up to the top of Mount Carmel, the Yitzveh, and he should gaze out, the Pashtos, we would understand that it means towards the Mediterranean, although there's a different medrash, Rashi brings it on the Pasuk, that says that it's actually in the Kinneret. So according to that, it would have to mean that you're looking across the width of Eretz Yisrael. The Yirak min Kvara Bayam, you'll see something that looks like a sieve in the water, because it's like a round rock full of holes. The Zui Be'er Shel Miriam, that is the Be'er Shel Miriam, because when they needed water in the desert, the Eibishter made a nest and the water came out of the rock and it came out, it spouted out through all the holes all over it. Omer Rab, so Rab says in this connection, Mayan Amitalto Toher, a movable wellspring is Toher, meaning it's not Makabel Tumah, and you can also tovel in the water from it. Now, you can't tovel in Mayim Shovim, of course, but a movable spring is not considered Mayim Shovim, it's actually considered a spring. Now, what kind of movable spring? Rezui Be'er Shel Miriam. That would be the Be'er Shel Miriam. There's no other movable spring, because any other kind of spring is attached to the ground, but there you have it. In other words, you could tovel in the Be'er Shel Miriam, and in fact, it says that is what the Jewish people did in the Midbar, they used the well of Miriam, though they used the water that came from it as their makoros. The Gemara goes on to say, Amar Reb Yossi ben Reb Zvida, ha'oisim malocha b'shnei Bein HaShemashes, chayv chatas memonachef. If a person does malocha on Bein HaShemashes, a Friday going into Shabbos, and of Shabbos going into Matzah Shabbos, then he's going to be chayv chatas no matter what. Because if it's one thing if he does only on one, then you could say it's a suffix, whether it was actually Shabbos or not. But if he does it, for example, if he does malocha, for example, if he does it during Bein HaShemashes, a Friday going into Shabbos, and of Shabbos going into Sunday, there's no question that one or the other, he's been Mechalel Shabbos. So therefore, for sure, he's going to be chayiv chatas. Tosfos discusses in the Gemara about, does that mean, are we talking about at the same time, for example, or are we talking about different times during Bein HaShemashes? Because the idea would be, Tosfos explains, we're saying that Bein HaShemashes is Safek Yom, Safek Laila, but we're not going to say that every day it's a different part of Bein HaShemashes. If we're going to say, if we say, for example, Reb Nechemya, that Bein HaShemashes is Chatzi Mil, and let's take that to mean 9 minutes, we're not going to say that one day, that one time the day might begin 1 minute into that 9 minute period, and another day it might begin 2 minutes into that 9 minute period. It's always going to be the same time. So therefore, if a person were to do Malacha 1 minute into Bein HaShemashes, for example, on Friday, and another 1 minute into Bein HaShemashes on Shabbos, then one way or the other he's been Mechal Shabbos. So the Gemara continues, Amalei Rava L'Shamei. So Rava says to his attendants, to his Meshoris, Atun de lekim lechub shiura de rabbanon. You, and Atun is actually plural, so pashtus, he means not just the shamash, he probably means his whole family, maybe the people of his town, whatever. You are not familiar with the shiurim of the chachamim, what we said before about the various opinions of how long ben hashemashis lasts. So therefore, when should you light Shabbos candles? When the sun is at the tops of the palm trees, then you should light the candles for Shabbos. So that way you're making sure that you're lighting them early enough that there's no problem that you might accidentally be going into Shabbos. In fact, the Sefer Yireim explains that Bein HaShemoshes, the Shiurim, the Gemara was mentioning before, Bein HaShemoshes are actually before Shkia. So we don't accept that lahalacha, which is why in principle, we always talk about having the 18 minutes. But nevertheless, that is one source for tackle why we light Shabbos candles in most places 18 minutes before Shkia is based on that opinion that Bein HaShemoshes actually begins at that time 18 minutes before Shkia, which would be around when the sun is at the tops of the trees. The Alter Rebbe in Seder Achnasas Shabbos also stresses the same point, is you have to be very careful to light Shabbos candles when the sun is at the tops of the trees, because otherwise you may end up being too late. The Gemara asks, what do you do on a cloudy day where you can't see the sun? So it depends. The Gemara says, but Masa, if you're in the city, Chozi Tarnagola, you can look at what the roosters do. So during the daytime, they sit, they perch on high places, on high beams or whatever. Or actually, as it's coming, means as it's coming. So during the daytime, they're around on the ground, but when it comes towards the evening, they sense it. Even though it's cloudy, and they go and perch up on the beams or the tops of the houses or whatever, so you can tell by that. The dabra, if you're out in the fields, out in the woods, chazi urva, you can see what the crows do. Same thing, the crows will go perch on the trees as it comes evening. Inami adoni, or another thing you can look for adoni, which Rashi says is a plant. Rashi brings a French word for it in English. The word for it in French is malva. In English, it's actually fairly similar. In English, it's called mallow. But the leaves of it point in different directions throughout the day because it's always trying to get maximum sunlight. So its leaves naturally turn towards the sun. There are other plants that do that also, sunflowers, for example, and others. Anyway, so you can tell by that when you see that the leaves of the plant are bent very far to the west, then you know that it's late in the day and the sun is about to set in the west and it's time to light Shabbos candles. The next perek, Kira Perek Shlishi, talks about a number of different issues involving cooking on Shabbos. So there you have all the dinim of Shehiya and Atmana and so forth. And then it starts talking about dinim as far as using hot water to bathe on Shabbos. So in that connection, the Gemara mentions various dinim about bathing and about bathing on Shabbos and what you're allowed and not allowed to do. So in that connection, the Gemara mentions something where Reb Zera saw Reb Abohu doing something in the bathhouse on Shabbos, but he wasn't sure what it was exactly. He saw that it looked like he was swimming. And the Gemara discusses, would he be allowed? You're not allowed to swim on Shabbos. And the Gemara makes the distinction whether, for example, you're not allowed to swim in a lake or a pond or something, but in principle, you're allowed to swim in something like a swimming pool, which has a lip around it. Anyway, so then that leads the Gemara now to give another example of Reb Zera talking about something that he saw Reb Abohu doing when he went to bathe, but he wasn't sure about the details. So the Gemara says, Amar Reb Zera, Ano chazite l'Reb Abohu, I saw Reb Abohu, shiniach yodav keneged ponov shalmata, that he put his hands in front of his lower face, which is a nice euphemistic way of saying his private parts. So when he was bathing, he would do that. He would cover them with his hands. But I don't know, Reb Zera says, whether his hands would actually touch his aver or not. So Gemara says, obviously he didn't touch it. The Tanya, don't we learn in a Braisa in Masechta Nida? Rebel Yezer says that anybody who holds on to his aver and urinates, kilo maybe mabel lo'olam, as if he's bringing a mabel to the world, because that's likely to cause him to be motzi zera levatola, and that was one of the averas of the dirt on mabel. Which in fact, Tosfos points out, now the Chachamim there do disagree with Rabbi Eliezer. They say a person is allowed to hold his Aver when he's urinating, but Tosfos says they give a reason for that, because otherwise drops of urine are going to get all over his feet, and people are going to think that he's damaged in that area, and they're going to be motzi lads and his children, but they agree with the basic idea that a person is not supposed to be touching his Aver unnecessarily. So how is there even a possibility that Rabbi Bohu is touching his Aver when he's bathing? So I'm going to buy it. Asa'ur could be leshes. So Abaye answers because we could argue that Rabbi Bahu might have considered it like the example of a berleshes. A berleshes is a troop of soldiers that come to the city. The word the Shurdish bolash means to investigate, or to, and in modern Hebrew, for example, a balshan is a linguist, and a bolash is a detective or whatever. So it means like they're searching around in the city to look for things that they can take as spoils and as plunder. So now you have a din, as we're going to discuss, as far as a troop of soldiers like that come to a city. Now we learn in a Mishnah in Avodah Zarah. Beleshes shenichnas aleir, when a troop of soldiers that are coming for plunder comes like that into a city, b'shas shalom, if it's a time of peace, meaning Rashi says they're the soldiers of the ruling government of that area, so they're step up, they're stam coming in to illegally plunder. Chobius psuchas asuris, any open barrels of wine are also, because the soldiers may have picked them up and drunk from them or did nisuch with them or whatever, and therefore they're also to drink. Stumus mutaris, but any ones that are sealed are mutar, because obviously the soldiers didn't touch them. Vishas melchama, on the other hand, if this troop is coming to the city in a time of war, so they're invading from another country, for example, both the sealed and the open barrels are mutar, the fishain knai lanasech, because they have no time to do nisuch, because they're in a hurry to get out of there. When they belong to that government, they figure that fine, it may not be so legal for them to go and harass the citizens, but at least they know they're not necessarily safer, and therefore they feel they have more time to go and do nisuch. Whereas when they're invading from another place, they want to get out of there as fast as possible before they get attacked, and therefore all the wine will remain butter. So we see, because they're afraid of the soldiers of the other side that may attack them, they're not going to do nisuch. Hachinami, the same thing. You could say over here, kim into boys, since when a person is bathing, as the Gemara is going to explain in a second, he's afraid, he's not necessarily going to come to hear her, so maybe even it would have been allowed for Rabbi Bahu to place his hand in such a way that he would touch his aver. So the Gemara asks, so what's the fear over here? Biasusa dinara. The answer is the fear of the river, that he might drown in the river. So therefore, even if he does place his hands in such a way that he touches, it wouldn't necessarily be also. And that's why Rabbi Zeira is saying, I'm not sure whether Rabbi Bahu used that heter or not. Okay, so the Gemara asks, Aini, so is that, so let's, but what are we saying? Either way, what we're saying is Rabbi Bahu would use his hands to cover his private area when he's bathing. So the Gemara says, Aini, is that so? Is that the right thing to do? A person who does that, who uses his hands to cover, uses a hand to cover his lower face, it's as if he's denying the bris of Avraham Avinu. It makes it look as though he's embarrassed of his bris milah. So he shouldn't be covering it. So why? So forget about whether Rabbi Bahu is touching or not. Why is he even covering it in the first place? Marsha explains why we're calling it bris shel Avraham Avinu. The reason is because we know that bris existed earlier. Oh, no, actually, he says that when it comes to Noach and his children, they didn't yet have the concept of bris milah. Noach himself was born gemalot, but the concept of doing a bris milah didn't exist yet. And because they had an erla, for them it would be embarrassing for their nakedness to be revealed in front of other people. As we find the story with Noach, where because Chum uncovered him and did whatever, then he was severely punished. As opposed to over here, Avraham Avinu comes and takes away the erla and makes it a public thing that he's doing a bris milah. So now, therefore, if a person is hiding it, then it makes it look like he's embarrassed of what Avraham Avinu accomplished as far as milah. So why is Rabbi Bahu doing that? So the answer is like Kasha, Hoki Nochis, Hoki Solid. There's no contradiction. One when he's going down to the river, the other one he's coming up. So when he's going down to the river, he's facing towards the river. He's facing away from the other people who are standing there by the riverbank. So there's no reason for him to be covering himself. And if he does, then it looks like he's embarrassed of his bris milah. When he's coming out of the river and he's facing them, then it's appropriate for him to cover himself because he's facing them and they shouldn't be showing off his erva to them. And the Gemara gives an example. He held the Rava Shochi. We have other examples of that. Rava, when he would go to the river to bathe, he would bend over. So instead of using his hands to cover himself like Rabbi Bahu did, instead what he would do is he would bend over in order to hide that area. Reb Zeira Zokif, on the other hand, Reb Zeira would stand up straight because he took into consideration what Rav is saying. You don't want to look like he's denying the bris milah. Rabbanan, the Beit Rav Ashi, and the Chachamim of the Yeshiva of Rav Ashi, they sort of split the difference. When they went down to the river, they would stand up straight, because then we're saying they're facing away from the people and there's no need for them to cover themselves. When they were coming out of the river, instead of using Rav Abohu's method of covering with their hand, where after all there was the concern that they might end up touching, instead they would bend over like what Rabba did. More on the topic of Reb Zeira and of Reb Zeira and bathhouses. The Gemara says Reb Zeira have a kamishtamit mid Reb Yehuda. Reb Zeira was trying to stay away from Reb Yehuda, who was his Rebbe. De boilem mesak la'arid Yisrael. Reb Zeira wanted to go and to make aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, and he knew that Reb Yehuda would disapprove of it. The Amar of Yehuda, as Reb Yehuda says in the Gemara at the end of Ksuvos, Kola Ola Mibavel Eretz Yisrael over Be'ese. Anybody who goes up from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael is over on a mitzvah saseh. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Bavel Yuva'u V'shama Yiyu. The Pasuk says they will be brought to Bavel and there they will stay, Hashem says, until I say otherwise. Now, in context, the Pasuk is talking about the Kalim of the Beis Mikdash, and Reb Zeira understood it that way. But Reb Yehuda, the Gemara tells us in Ksubas, he held that it refers to the Jewish people as well, and therefore the Jewish people have no business leaving Bavel before the Eibishter tells them to. The Gemara has a whole discussion over there about it, about the ins and outs of Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. And there's also a sicha, I think, in Chelik Yud Tes, where the Rebbe analyzes in some detail that Rambam does bring that halacha, that Rambam does bring a halacha that you're not allowed to leave Babel for other countries because Babel was a Makom Torah. And so the Rebbe has a whole analysis over there, is that you have a Rashi versus the Rambam about that Babel was a place of Torah and therefore you shouldn't leave it, versus Rabbi Yehuda's point that never mind whether it's a place of Torah or not, it's a place that was destined for the Golus of the Jewish people. And therefore, they're not allowed to leave it without permission. Anyway, that's how Reb Yehuda held, and Reb Zeira disagreed. So he didn't want to see Reb Yehuda, because then if Reb Yehuda finds out that he's going, that he wants to go to Eretz Yisrael, he'll tell him flat out, you are also too, and Reb Zeira is going to have to listen. So instead, he was evading Reb Yehuda. Omar, but he says to himself, Ezel v'esh meminei milsa, let me at least go and hear one thing of Torah from him, v'esi, and then I'll go, v'esak, and then I'll go up to Eretz Yisrael. So he went and found that Rabbi Yehuda was standing in the bathhouse. The Ka'omalil Shame, and Rabbi Yehuda was telling the Shame, she gave him the following instructions. First of all, he says in Lashon Kodesh, Havioli Neser, Havioli Masrik, bring me Neser, which is a kind of alkaline earth that they used to use in those days for shampoo or for soap, and bring me a Masrik, a comb. So those things he's saying in Lashon Kodesh. Then he continues in Aramaic, Pistchu pumaychu va'apiku hevla, open up your mouths and in the bathhouse and let the steam from inside your body go out, which means Rashi explains, in other words, let the steam of the bathhouse come in, and that'll take out the steam and the sweat from your body. And the last thing he says is the ishtu mimaya debay bunny, drink some of the water in the bathhouse. Not necessarily the actual water that you bathed in other words, but Rashi says even if the water was heated up only for bathing rather than for drinking, still you should drink some of it because as the Gemara says, soon it's good for you. The Rabbi Yaakov Emden, by the way, points out in his notes in the back of the Gemara, how he's supposed to drink in the bathhouse. You can't make a bracha over there. He says the vote might be, since as the Gemara says, it's really only for health reasons, not because a person is thirsty. The halacha is you only make a bracha on water only if you're drinking because of thirst. So therefore, that might be a reason they actually don't need to make a bracha on it. Reb Zeira says to himself, "You mullet, guys, can you give us a few more minutes, please?" Omar says, if I had not come only to hear this one series of statements by Rabbi Yehuda, dying it would have been enough for me, because now I've learned a tremendous amount from this. So the Gemara asks, what exactly did he learn? B'shleima haviyu neser v'haviyu masrik. This that the Rabbi Yehuda had said, bring me neser and bring me a comb. Kamash malon, we learn a halacha from it. Dvarim shel chol mutal omen b'loshen hakodesh, that you're allowed to say mundane things in the bathhouse, even in the base, you're allowed to say them even in Lashon Kodesh, even though you're in the bathhouse. Even though Lashon Kodesh is a language of Kedusha, and you would think it's inappropriate to be speaking with it in the bathhouse, nevertheless, for Divrei Kedusha, you can't, because you can't speak Torah in the bathhouse, but Dvarim Shel Chol, you're allowed to. So that's an important halacha that now he learned. As far as the third thing that Rabbi Yehuda says, "Pisku pumaychu va'apiku hevla," open up your mouth and let the hot air go out. Fine. Nami kiddush Shmuel. Also, we can say Rabbi Zera learned a tremendous thing from it because it bears out what Shmuel says. Da'amar Shmuel hevla mapik hevla. Shmuel says the hot air takes out the hot air. So exactly that, the hot air of the bathhouse, the hot steam of the bathhouse helps take out the steamy sweat from a person. So therefore, that's an important thing. El ishru maya de beboni mai malusa. What's so great about drinking the water from the bathhouse that Zera is so impressed by that? And the answer is the Tanya, because we're learning a braisa. Ochal v'lo shosa. If a person eats but doesn't drink, achilose dam, then his eating is like blood. In other words, it's not good for him. V'zeru tchilas choyle me'ayim. That's the beginning of getting stomach aches. Ochal v'lo holach dalad amas. If a person eats and does not afterwards walk for amas, achilose markeves, then his food will rot in his intestines because it doesn't go where it's supposed to go. V'zeru tchilas reyach ra. That's the beginning of bad body odor. Rashi says that bad breath, rather, comes from that. Hanitzruch l'nekova v'ochel, a person needs to go to the bathroom and he eats without doing that first. Doim l'tanur she'sikur agabe efrei. Then he's like an oven that was fired on top of the ashes that are there first, where the fire doesn't really do much good. V'zeru tchilas reyach zuama, that becomes the beginning of bad body odor because the person is constantly sweating and has a bad smell. Rochatz b'chamin, here's the one that Rabbi Yehuda is saying, rochatz b'chamin v'lo shosem ehan, if a person bathed in hot water and didn't drink some of the hot water, doim v'latanu she'isikur machutz v'lo isikur mufnim, then he's like an oven that was fired on the outside and not on the inside, it doesn't really do him a whole lot of good. That was Rabbi Yehuda's point. Rochatz b'chamin v'lo nishtatif b'tzonin, if a person bathed in hot water and did not afterwards rinse off in cold water, doim l'barzol sheich nisur la'ur v'lo yis nisur la'tzonin, then it's like iron that was put into the fire but not afterwards quenched in cold water, so therefore it's weak and it doesn't make a good cake. And the last one, rochatz v'lo yisach, the person bathes and doesn't anoint himself with oil or whatever, doim l'mayim agabi chavis, then it's like putting water on top of a barrel, meaning it only goes on the outside of the barrel, doesn't penetrate inside. Peshut Agadta explains that each of these statements, besides the poshut meaning that it's good for your health, they're also teaching us lessons in avodah. So he says, for example, the one about the ochel v'lo shosa means if a person is learning only nigla and he doesn't learn any pnimiyas satira, then it's like eating without drinking, it doesn't do him any good. If he doesn't walk for amos, meaning after a person learns, it should make him go out of the rishus that he was in and to put him in a different rishus. If he doesn't, then it's also no good. The one about the nitzrach l'nekova v'ochel, he says is, for example, a person has atzlos or atzvos, which we know from Tanya from the end of Perek Aleph, that those are miyisoda offer. If then clean him out first, then the learning the Torah and mitzvahs that he does are not going to accomplish what they're supposed to. The next one about the bathing but not drinking from the water is like a person who's not toichei kabara. He looks good on the outside, but he hasn't refined himself on the inside. The rochatz b'chamin v'lenishtatif b'tzonin, he says, refers to a person who has merirus, but he doesn't follow it up afterwards with the positive thing you're supposed to get out of merirus. And the last one about rochatz v'loisach is again where a person learns even pnimiyas haTorah, but he doesn't afterwards learn also things to actually improve his midas, which are compared to oil. So then it's not going to do him as much good as it should. Okay, Yom Yom Mashiach Geula, Chavtes other days. So to finish off what we were talking about the last couple of days about mitzvahs, betelus, lasid, lavoi. So yesterday we said that Rebbe had pointed out that the tzivui aspect of them will be batel, but the mitzvahs themselves will still exist. So because what is that? The concept of a mitzvah, a commandment to a person, is only relevant when a person is mitzios by himself. So then you can say he's a mitzios, and Hashem tells him, do such and such. But after the completion of the avodah and kiyum mitzvahs, so now when a person's entire mitzios and all of his details is permeated with Hashem's ratzon, so now the person has the other meaning of mitzvah, moshem tzav sevachibur. He's connected with Hashem, and they become one mitzvah. Yisrael, Arayis, and Kutubich, or Kolachad, as we will actually see, B'poyo, Lo'os, and Lo'oi. So therefore, at that point, you can't talk about a tzivui to a person. He's not a separate mitzvah. Rather, he is the mitzvah of Hashem's Ratzon, and therefore that Ratzon of Hashem automatically gets accomplished through the mitzvah's existing. Okay, halacha. We were continuing to talk about the halachas of fragrances. When you have a fragrance that comes from a grass or an herb or something like that, then you make the bracha bori isvei besam. the Alter Rebbe points out in Seder Birkusanin, and the word is isvei with a vase. You actually have a pasuk, and he refers to a pasuk in Mishlei that mentions isvois hori. How do you know what's considered a tree? What's considered greenery? If it has a hard stem and it lasts from year to year and it produces leaves, then it's considered a tree. If it always has a soft stem, then it's considered an herb. And then you say Bodhi Isvevasan.